LibroFM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. Choose from more than 150,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With LibroFM, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know what one we're talking about, but you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community.
If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. Listen while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free LibroFM app.
If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out recommendations and curated lists from the people who know audiobooks best, local booksellers.
Listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get a 2-month audiobook membership for the price of 1 month.
Go to Libro.fm, that's LIBRO.FM, and enter bookstore at checkout. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the Bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I am Corinne. This week we read The Witches by Roald Dahl, just kind of as a short little Halloween type episode. You watched the movie as well, right?
I did, yep.
The 1990 movie. And then I also watched that. And I actually, while I was finishing up the book, I was watching the new Robert Zemeckis one that was just released on HBO Max or whatever it's called now. Plus, whatever it is. Who knows? Anyway. I got lots of, some thoughts about this book that I think is nostalgic for a lot of people. And the movie was very important in my life as a young person. So, it's going to be a little nostalgia-filled.
Yeah.
Children's horror.
Before we begin, I do want to say, so I did not watch the movie when I was a kid, but I've seen clips of it, like, over the years, of course, and up until a few years ago, I actually thought The Witches and The Witches of Eastwick were the same movie.
That's good.
Because I saw clips of both. They're not.
No.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. Whenever I think of The Witches of Eastwick, all I can think of is I think I sent you that thing from like Men Writing Women. I think that's from The Witches of Eastwick, where it's like, she had to sit and think about peeing because her, plumbing is so much more complicated. And when men want to pee, they just pee and it just comes straight out or whatever. It's like the stupidest quote. So yeah, it turns out maybe not equally, but, both written by problematic men. So there you go.
Yes. Yeah. John Updike is who wrote The Witches of Eastwick. Don't plan on reading that book or watching the movie.
No.
But anyway, so The Witches. The Witches by Roald Dahl was first published in 1983 by Jonathan Cape, which is like under Penguin Random House now. I don't think it exists anymore, but anyway, that's who bought it, I think. With illustrations by Quentin Blake. I think Blake did all or most of Dahl's children's illustrations. They're very good. I love them. But
yes.
As we said, it was made into a movie that was released in 1990 and a remake that was released today when we're recording. So the book is about a young boy, he's unnamed, and his grandmother, who he lives with after his parents die in a car crash. His grandmother has been telling him stories about witches, and when they return to England to follow his parents' wish that he be educated in England, because the grandmother's Norwegian, they run into an international convention of witches at the hotel where they are staying. It's not openly a convention of witches.
Yes.
They're under, I think, Women Against Child Abuse, something like that.
It's,
I can't remember exactly.
The society, or the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty Towards Children or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So the boy overhears the Grand High Witch discussing plans to open sweet shops across England in order to poison the sweets, so when the children eat the sweets, they turn into mice. Luckily, I'm going to say spoilers for this, if you haven't already read it or seen any of the movies.
Yes.
So luckily, the boy and his grandmother concoct a plan to steal the potion and poison the witches with it. Their plan does succeed, with the witches being turned into mice and the hotel staff exterminates them. The boy, who is still a mouse, returns home to live with his grandmother. And that's the end. Well, they make plans for more extermination of witches, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. I would say. Yeah. So, yeah, well, I guess I'll just say that, like, I had no idea that this was written in 1983. I was born in 89. So, like, I think there's part of that where it's, like, anything that happened before I was born was just, like, forever old. I think you get that, like, when you're a kid. Like, anything that happened before you're born is just, it's always been there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's like part of that. I will say last weekend was when I watched the 1990 movie, and I had no idea that it came out in 1990. I mean, I would have been a child, an infant still at that point. You probably could have told me, with the exception of like a couple of things that the kid wears in it, you probably could have told me it was made in 1979, and I would have believed you. It's got a look yeah. to it. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm kind of astounded to find out that these are newer than I expected. And maybe it's just because, like, I associate Roald Dahl so strongly with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which is, like, another movie that I had seen so much. If that was Charlie or Willy Wonka, I'm not sure. The old one with them.
The What's book his face? Is Charlie. The movie, okay. The first movie was Willy Wonka
okay.
and
so,
the Chocolate
yeah.
Factory.
The first movie being Willy Wonka then. I think, I associate it all so strongly with that I just assumed that all of it was, you know, much earlier, like the 70s or something, or even before that. So I guess I'm just surprised to find out how relatively new they were at the time that I consumed them.
Yeah, I would have guessed Dahl's children's books were mostly published 50s and 60s, when really mm-hmm. it's more like 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, as a kid, I loved the book, obsessed with the first movie. I didn't really read very much of Dahl's other stuff, but I did love James and the Giant Peach when that came yeah. out. And then Matilda, which I feel like for our generation, like, everybody probably loved Matilda.
My mom absolutely hated Matilda. She thought it was disgusting. I think that scene, well, and the scene actually really grosses me out too, with the kid eating the cake.
I can't handle
it. And so she like wouldn't have it in the house, which is hilarious because I saw so many things I should have never seen. Like, case in point, The Witches is honestly like, it was horrifying when I was a kid. I remember watching that and being scared for my life, like just truly terrified. And also, like, I saw The Exorcist. I saw all sorts of things like way, way, way too young. So it's funny that yeah. my mom was like, absolutely no. to Harriet, what is it? I was going to call it Harriet the Spy. Matilda. But yeah. she was like, no to Matilda. She put her foot down there.
I think I've said this before, but I pretty much could read. Like, my parents did not pay attention to what I was reading at all. Mm-hmm. So I was reading like Anne Rice and Stephen King in middle school, but I wasn't allowed to watch Jurassic Park.
Because
it was too scary.
Yeah. My dad fell asleep on the couch, like, pretty much exclusively throughout all of my childhood. He would just, like, stay and watch TV and, like, fall asleep on the couch and then eventually wake up and go to bed. But, like, when I was little, I would do that with him. So we would start by watching, like, normal, nice TV stuff, and then I would fall asleep, and then he'd change the channel to like HBO or whatever, and then I would end up watching House 4 and seeing like this pizza with a face go down a drain, and then and then be scared for the rest of my life about it. So yeah. That's kind yeah. of what it was. I don't know if I was ever actually supposed to be seeing these things, but I also had brothers who were 6 and 9 years older than me, so like that stuff just kind of came my way anyhow. Yeah.
But yeah, so I did not watch The Witches when I was a kid. It definitely would have been too scary, also associated with witches, so I probably would not have been allowed to. But yeah, I definitely surprised that it was so recent.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the book then? I guess, you know, all of our experiences are reading this as an adult, but what did you think of the book?
So I listened to it on audio. Everybody listening groans. I'm about to say, but no, I really liked it. I did watch the movie first, actually, before we planned on reading this, and it follows the movie very, very closely. So it mm-hmm. was really easy for me to listen to it. And I really liked how Dahl writes in that, at least I remember this from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory too, is he kind of like writes an explanation. It's just like exposition for like a long period of time.
Yeah.
And with the witches, the grandma is just like explaining about the witches. And it's funny because it's sort of, in a way, you could call it like clunky because it's just like a dump of information.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just exactly the kind of stuff that I liked as a kid. And I still enjoyed reading it.
I think it works really well for children's books, though. I remember mm-hmm. when I was reading this afternoon, there's a point where the boy is, he is a mouse at the time and he's in a shoe. And then a chambermaid comes up and picks up the shoe and he bites her. And it says, I just did it instinctively. I didn't have any control over it, which was, I think, like, the very clear kind of writing that I don't know maybe is the best kind of writing for children's books, where, like, they use a vocab word, but then they really have, like, they really have the context clues there for you to learn what it means, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of felt that way, too. It was kind of like the classic sort of writing for children that laid it out in a way that was really easy to follow, but was still, like, very exciting for kids, I think. Yeah. And also, I found it really charming. I went in, because probably shouldn't do this whole episode without explaining that it's come up recently and it's been a pretty big topic, as like this is a thing that we're all going through with looking at problematic favorites and all of that sort of thing. So like Roald Dahl was pretty openly anti-Semitic. And so obviously in us choosing this book, we're not condoning that at all. And it's one of those things where you just feel really weird about it, I guess, the whole time. But what I wanted to say was, I lost my train of thought because I decided to interject with that.
That's okay. We needed to we needed to say it. What were you talking about before that?
I think I was just saying that it was really good. And I found it charming, I guess. I thought that I had a point and I literally cannot remember it anymore.
Well, I think that reading stuff like that and knowing what you do about the author, like you can look at the work and then see maybe where the problematic beliefs and racism, anti-Semitism, sexism, whatever it is in the work. But I also think no, that's bad too. I was going to say, but also you don't have to, but then that makes it sound like, oh gosh, oh no.
No, it is. It's just one of those things that's very hard because I think like he is like the classic children's novelist in like a lot of ways, the way that you would probably put him in the same kind of category as like E.B. White, except Roald Dahl is like the slightly creepy one, or you know, does weirder things, so it's like the fun kind of version of like kids literature, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, so I think like it's really hard to separate those feelings of like nostalgia towards this sort of thing with knowing now as an adult that like he was probably an asshole, and not probably, it's pretty much confirmed he was an asshole. So there's that. It is just really interesting, though. I think like what I wanted to talk about eventually with this was the idea of like using horror that's targeted at children. I was going to ask you, I think, like, do you think kids would find this book scary? It's hard to say that from like an adult standpoint, I think. But
I guess my answer isn't no. It's like yes and no, because I remember reading Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which is pretty scary. I mean, the kids really are changed forever
mm-hmm.
in the factory and not be freaked out by it. But I also think
right.
that kids maybe can like handle a little bit more than what adults think they can handle.
Yeah, I was reading Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which mm-hmm. honestly I think is a little bit scarier than this. But maybe just because those ones are really just like scary stories that just end. And this one is like there's a scary story and there's witches who are scary, but like the grandmother and the grandson's relationship are just very, very sweet and endearing that you don't necessarily feel bad. Like, I think the book wraps itself up in a way that doesn't make it sound like a death sentence necessarily. Like, it's kind of exciting. So there is that. But what I wanted to talk about a little bit, I guess, was just like the idea of using witches specifically, like if those are symbols of, you know, like the sexism and anti-Semitism that he like believed in, I suppose. It's just really weird, I think, to be an adult now and knowing that, and then also thinking about the fact that I'm not sure I would have caught on when I was a kid. You know what I mean? Like, that's, it's kind of insidious, but it's also, it just seems sort of stupid, because unless you are a child who is raised with a lot of those beliefs, or unfortunately is the target of people who have those beliefs, like, I don't know that it's something that you would necessarily be able to pick up on. Not that that, like, excuses it, because it absolutely 100,000% does not. But I think it's one of those things that's kind of, like, made me think more about horror in general, which is just that, like, generally speaking, when you're writing horror, you're using, like, some sort of real-life anxiety or whatever it happens to be, and then making a monster out of those things, and how messed up it is to do that with people or groups of people. And I think it's just strange to be an adult and realize that that's, like, what a lot of horror and folk tales and stuff, like, in a lot of ways have done, is it's taking, like, the other and then turning them into, like, literal monsters. And that's just very strange to, like, look at and then realize it's kind of, like, a weird, like, human tradition to have used throughout time.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that as adults are going to make connections to real life things probably more than children are. And I mean, I totally agree with you with that. If you are the target of those attacks, or you're grow up surrounded by people who are using those same stereotypes and tropes, then you may notice it, like, as a kid more than somebody who doesn't. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess part of it too is, like, I would need to be, like, a psychiatrist or psychologist to know if reading something like this does influence kids' minds or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I really don't know.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. It's an interesting conversation, I guess, to have, like, right now. I just saw, like, a headline about how Disney Plus is putting warnings on different movies. Like, they're putting a warning on the Lady and the Tramp because of, like, the negative stereotyping of the Siamese cats. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, I don't know, it's just such an interesting time, I think, to, like, finally be reckoning with all of these different references that are, like, very harmful, negative stereotypes in what was popular culture and still remains popular culture, and also is stuff that a lot of people have complicated feelings towards because they both love it and recognize how messed up it is.
Yeah, and I think that to me is, like, the best option to have a discussion about it. Like, I don't really think in, like, with Lady and the Tramp, those Siamese cats, like, do I necessarily think they should be cut out of the movie? Like, oh, I don't know. If you wanted to skip them for your own kids, like, I would say, yeah, you know, that's totally fine to cut them out. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, like, put a warning on it when it comes to those movies. Yeah. And the same way with, like, books like this, you know? And I think that what is people are doing with H.P. Lovecraft's work is probably the best idea, sort of having a conversation about it and taking uh-huh. what they like about it and then creating their own thing. Because he was, you right. know, like the worst of the worst, I feel like, with his beliefs.
Yeah, we spoke about him when we read The Ballad of Black Tom by Victor Lavalle last year or the year before. I don't know how long ago it was. Forever ago? Yeah. I'm not sure. Yesterday? yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's been making me think a lot about, also because you brought up H.P. Lovecraft, the way that these things kind of, like, exist, like, throughout the history of horror in a way. And I find that really interesting and, like, kind of revealing about, like, human nature. I mean, if you think about, like, the negative stereotyping that happened with, like, the goblins in Harry Potter mm-hmm. and stuff too, like, some of those things are, like, taken from, like, the traditions of those creatures, like, throughout time. But that's also a problem. So, yeah, I don't know. It's weird because they're genres that people, like, are really drawn to because it's fantastical and exciting. But then it's really jarring to come to terms with, like, the real reason why those characters are the way they are or whatever. I think it's upsetting. It's just very strange.
Well, and we're way off subject, but I just want to make one more comment. I think of, like, the film yeah. Disclosure, which is about trans lives being depicted on screen, and how forever that has been the fastest punchline is a trans person, like, put a man in a dress. And it's like, why is this right. even funny? And it's just this, like, idea that that's how best to show somebody is weird or unnatural is to do that. And it's just really strange right. how we still, it's kind of like what you said about the other. Whatever is, like, other and different is the quickest way to make somebody a villain.
Yeah, or in horror, to make them super powerful or whatever it happens to be, or like with the witches, make them hate children and want to kill all children, mm-hmm. which, I mean, if you're a weird, like, obsessed with Q conspiracies, not because you believe Q conspiracies, but because you're obsessed with the people who are obsessed with them, that's the same talking points we're doing now. That Democrats or whoever your enemy is, like, uses children to sacrifice them to gain power
yeah.
or whatever. So it's just, it's really crazy that these things, like, also exist, like, in real life belief, which is wild, but also, like, how kind of timeless the belief is. I don't know. It's just fascinating to me. And I think it's also, yeah, like, when you're applying it to the other is when it becomes, like, really dangerous. I don't know. Now I'm fascinated. If somebody has some, I don't know, like, academic essays on this subject, let me know.
Yeah. Yeah. So
anyway,
to transition.
I totally did not mean to do that completely.
No, that's good.
I just wanted to do a little bit.
I think no. we needed to talk about it some way. So,
yeah.
But, so another thing I was thinking about with the witches and with probably a lot of other of Dahl's work is that adults are sort of, like, universally bad, except for adults who don't act like adults. So we see that with, like, the boy's grandma. She smokes cigars and nobody else smokes cigars. She straight up lies to the poor hotel guy manager. Mr. Bean in the movie, and tells him she's seen rats in the hotel just in order to so that the boy can keep his pet rats.
Yeah, that was insane that they would bring mice to a hotel.
And then she threatens him with calling the health department, and this is just presented as good for grandma for doing this. It's just yeah. very funny.
I did love the idea that, like, she would be so against baths, which is, like, I don't know if a lot of things in this book or like, in, you know, Roald Dahl's work in general are, like, universal things that people applied to children, or if they just kind of became applied to children because they were in his books or whatever, but, like, being against baths and, like, loving candy and all of that sort of thing, I don't know, I find it really funny, and, like, the idea that she tells him not to have baths because if you're covered in dirt, the witches can't smell you.
And then she says...
which just makes her very exciting to a kid, right?
Yeah.
Because it's the grandma who's not going to make you take a bath.
Well, yeah. And then she says, like, you'll know that you see a witch if she walks by you covering her nose. Like, a woman walks by you covering her nose. And it's like, everybody yeah. is going to walk by covering their nose if you bathe once a month and you're a child.
That's true. That is true. Yeah, I don't know. I liked those funny, like, little things that would kind of just make her, like, seem very exciting to a kid, because they're kind of, like, not adult things necessarily, which are all boring. And
yeah,
I also just love a story that involves a grandma.
Yes. Oh, so the big difference between the movie and the book is that at the end of the book, the boy stays a mouse.
Yes.
And in the movie, there's a new character and who is, like, the assistant to the Grand High Witch, and she ends up, like, secretly turning him back into a boy. So why do you think that changed? And is it because filmmakers thought American audiences would be too sensitive?
I don't know. I had heard that the end of the book was not the same as the movie, so I just assumed that he would stay a mouse in the book. And so I was kind of waiting for, like, this sort of dread feeling to come over me, but it's really not there, because he's excited to be a mouse, that he doesn't have to go to school and take tests. And which is like, again, a very classic thing for kids to not like is school. And so, yeah, I don't know. He seemed pretty happy in like he and his grandma were like that whole plan. To me, it just reminded me of like when you're really having like a good time and like either making up a story or planning things with like with your grandma or your parents or whatever when you're a kid. And those memories, like for me, are very, I don't know, they're just very nostalgic, I guess. So maybe that was just me like projecting this on there, but it seemed like a happy ending actually. So I don't necessarily think that the movie needed to go that way.
Yeah, I was surprised at the ending of the book because I really didn't expect them to leave him a mouse, but grandma rigged up her house so he could just move through it and do what he wanted. And then he's like, she's like, okay, you're probably only going to live 9 years. And he's like, cool, then I'll die before you. It's like, it's actually like very dark, but you're right. It doesn't come off that way. It comes off as like, you know, hey, sometimes life is unfair, but actually it's not that bad.
Yeah. And I think he says it doesn't matter what you look like, as long as somebody loves you, which is like a very sweet kind of sentiment to have wrapped up in there. It is. Yeah. But speaking about the movie specifically, first of all, it's incredible. Like you said, Mr. Bean is the hotel manager. Angelica Houston is just iconic. Mm-hmm. A queen. She is the Grand High Priestess. And the kids are like actual children in the very beginning, like the first scene when the grandma is telling the boy about witches. He's like sitting there with these glasses that like magnify his eyes. Yes. And he kind of like he takes them off a little bit and like looks at them kind of. And it's just like it's the kind of scene that you don't really see in movies where it's like they just actually literally let this kid be a kid for a minute. And so it just felt like very crazy to have that on camera. Mm-hmm. I loved that. Yeah, I don't know. The movie is great. The one scene I think that they really added, which is also like permanently imprinted on my brain, I just have very, very clear memories of this, is when he actually escapes the hotel once they find him in the ballroom, and he's running away from them and trying to hide, and they're in like the seaside of England and there's cliffs and he's trying to run away, and Angelica Houston sees a pram with a baby in it and she shoves it down this hill and sends it hurtling towards these cliffs, and he like runs to stop it. If I had to think like a scene from any movie that I saw when I was a child, like that would be in the top five that have stayed with me my entire life.
Yeah, that one is good.
It's
yeah,
so insane.
I also think that the scene where they all reveal themselves to be witches, like they take off their masks or whatever, is so gruesome and frightening.
Yes.
Even as an adult, I was like, oh, wow.
It should also be said, but the I don't think he directed it, but Jim Henson did like the, I don't know if they were producers or what, but so like when the boy and Bruno are turned into mice, it's all practical effects, obviously, but when they're turned into mice, like when the mice are running along the hallway, they're real mice. But when they stop and talk and like do scenes, they're puppets, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's just, I love it so much. Yeah. I don't know. It's great. And it's creepy in that way that like Jim Henson's movies were really creepy. There's like a grittiness to it. Like the color palette isn't like bright and shiny. It's all kind of like subdued and a little bit creepy.
Sorry, I lost you there. The color palette isn't.
It's not like bright and shiny. It's subdued and like kind of bland and boring, which makes it seem like a little bit gross.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's intentional or if that's just what I associate it with, but
yeah. I did really also like the scene where Grandma is trying to show Bruno's parents, Bruno the mouse, and the mom absolutely flips out. I do have a mice phobia. So that would probably be me, to be honest, though.
I forgot that you don't like mice. There are many mice in this. I think it's very funny also that, like, when all of the witches are turned into mice at the end, or in the book, like, everybody runs out of the kitchen, and instead of being like, where did all of the people go? They're like, we can do nothing but murder mice now. Yes. They're just, like, all ready to like stomp on and kill every mouse instead of just being like, I'm out of here.
Like, well, better call the exterminator. Like, nope, every single person is totally fine with killing the mice.
The one thing I will say that I was scared of, speaking of the book again, I'm going all over the place, but the one thing that scared me now was when the grandmother was explaining witches and like what they did to children. In the beginning, she says something along the lines of like, it makes them really happy to be able to turn children into something that the family will then kill and eat for dinner. Mm. And I found that actually very terrifying because it does play into like a real life fear I think that parents would have, which would be that they've made some sort of mistake that like leads to their child being hurt. Mm-hmm. And I think he really nailed something there that was like real, and that wasn't just about like a kid being scared of like the unknown.
Yeah.
There's like something tangible with that, which like I think that's the difference between like childhood fears and like adulthood fears in some ways.
Yeah. I also think the grandma's friend getting stuck in the painting is absolute nightmare fuel.
That one's really good. Like, I think, you know, in a lot of ways it does sort of like the fairy tale horror, which is that it also like they don't get resolved, which is very much kind of like fairy tales sometimes, like that don't have the happy endings, where like if you think about like the original Grimm's fairy tales sort of things, where like, I don't know, what is it that Cinderella's feet get burnt off or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's got that feeling to it where it's not like, yeah, there's not necessarily happily ever after and things aren't bright and shiny. They're sort of dire.
Yeah. And then, but the language used makes it still a kid's book. So it still doesn't come off as like that bad in a way.
Right,
like I say that the picture thing is a nightmare fuel, but that's just like sort of the idea of it. Like reading about it is just like, oh wow, that sucks. Witches are real, you know?
And also it's just like a really interesting creative idea.
Yeah.
You know, like I hadn't heard that one before necessarily. I did watch, like I said, I watched a little bit of the Zemeckis one. I had it playing. It's come out to pretty mixed reviews. It sounds like Stanley Tucci is the hotel manager, so that's a bright shining spot for me. But it was interesting. They do play around with the story a whole lot more, which I think, you know, there's always room for that. It doesn't follow the book quite as closely. I think if there's one thing that I would have been annoyed by is that, like, it does the very kind of clean and shiny sort of image mm-hmm. that like most children's movies are taking on now. And like maybe I would compare it maybe to like the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So Tim Burton's version of it where like everything is just kind of like candy colored and very clean and like everybody's lit in a really weird way that drives me nuts. But yeah, I couldn't quite follow along with the story that was going on, but I mean, it didn't seem bad. I'm sure children will enjoy it, but there's no way it could ever take the place of the 1990 version in my heart.
Yeah.
The recesses of my nightmares.
Yeah. I will probably watch the new movie at some point, maybe, you know, when I'm washing dishes or something. But I really liked the 1991 as well. Also, I do want to say, I listened to the audiobook and it was read by Miranda Richardson, who played Rita Skeeter in Harry Potter, and I highly recommend it. I think she did really, really good. She kind of does voices a little bit, but yeah, very good.
Yeah. I always loved listening to audiobooks, like when I was a kid, if we were traveling somewhere. It'd be fun to do with a young person. I would be interested to know if anybody out there wants to like do this experiment on an 8-year-old they know. Make them watch the 1990 version of the movie and the in the new version of the movie and just get back and see which one's better.
Poll your children.
A few people did reach out to me on Goodreads to let me know that they've been reading this too recently. So let us know what your thoughts were. We'd like to hear from you.
And thanks for listening to The Bookstore.
If you'd like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
You can find all the ways to contact us, email, social media, phone line at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion will be Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becca Young and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye. I was disappointed that the boy's parents died in a car crash, as I was expecting something on par with how James and the Giant Peach's parents died, which is being eaten by a rhinoceros that escaped from the zoo.